court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, how's it going today, Tommy?
Well, I'm moving around a lot better. Legs working better and better all the time.
You are. I noticed that we were walking in here into the Smurl podcast studios.
Yeah, I mean, I've still got, I don't know about a limp, more of a shuffle, but it's working. It's working. It doesn't bend all the way it's supposed to bend, but it's getting there.
I'm getting ready to do the Super Bowl shuffle, it looks like.
Yeah, or Icky Woods. Was that the guy that did the Icky Shuffle?
The Icky Shuffle.
Yeah, Cincinnati Bengals. Was that his name? Was it Icky Woods?
Icky Woods, yeah.
Yeah, is that right?
The Icky Shuffle.
What hit my brain, but I didn't know if it was right. After I said it, I didn't know if it was right.
I've had a lot of things hit my brain lately. I don't know if they're right or not.
I think it hurts my brain, but it cleans me out, and then I can go on. It's a little Jimmy Buffett for you.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
What song is that?
It's Hard to Reason with Hurricane Season.
Oh, I've heard that song.
It's a good song.
I just didn't recognize your rendition of it.
Well, I don't sing it very well. That's probably why. If you heard it sung right, you'd have recognized it.
And maybe if I'd had a margarita and a straw hat on, I would have been like, oh, yeah. So I don't know if you've been keeping up with the news or not, but there has been a recent spate of events here locally, several crimes that are unrelated but seem to be a current trend.
I'm not sure what you're talking about. I read the news. I read the paper every day. I watch the local news every day. I watch the national news every day. But I don't know about this recent spate.
Well, on July 23rd, there was a couple in Johnson County, Kentucky, which is, I believe, fairly close to here.
You doesn't have to call me Johnson.
And they were charged with kidnapping kids, drug possession, and owning a pet squirrel.
Oh, I did see that.
Yeah. So they were charged with owning a pet squirrel, which is you're not allowed to do.
Well, all right. I didn't know that.
And oddly enough, September 4th, yesterday, there was an article in the Herald-Dispatch about a couple from Spencer, West Virginia, who were arrested in Milton. And they were arrested on several charges, including being in possession of a baby squirrel and intent to deliver controlled substance, conspiracy, and driving on a suspended license.
Well, actually, that's the one I think I saw. I don't think I saw the one in Kentucky. I think I saw the one in West Virginia.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm just waiting for all these, what's going to happen with all these squirrel charges.
The squirrels must have something to do with the drugs, because there's drugs in all these. Is that like the canary in the mines or something like that?
I don't know.
They feed the drugs to the squirrel, and if the squirrel lives, then they figure they're okay or something?
Well, I do have to give a shout out to my friend, who's a lawyer, Glenn Conway. He brought this to my attention in court yesterday about this recent squirrel outbreak epidemic of crime wave.
The squirrels on a leash.
Yeah, I don't know.
Squirrels on a leash. That sounds like a reality show.
Squirrels on a leash. So if you're out there possessing baby squirrels or squirrels as pets, watch out.
It's against the law. Just say no.
Just say no.
Just say no to pet squirrels. You know how you catch a squirrel, don't you?
How?
Climb up a tree and act like a nut. You knew that. That was an old one. I just slipped it in too fast for you.
Makes sense, yeah. Well, this episode is not really about possession of wild animals and crimes thereof.
Oh, well, squirrels aren't that wild anyway.
This is, we're going to talk about our old friend, Mr. Jerry Mand.
Jerry Mander?
Yeah, you remember him.
I remember Jerry Mander. We covered that on a previous episode of our own podcast.
Yes, on a previous episode of our own podcast, which we covered this ourselves.
But it was just in general what it is. It wasn't so topical as it is now. It seems to be coming up quite a bit in the news here lately.
It does. And I'll tell you, I don't know if it's your just previous Jimmy Buffett reference, but it makes me think of Jollymon when you say it.
Jollymon?
Jerry Mand. So Jollymon's another good song by Jimmy Buffett, by the way.
It absolutely is. It's a good book, too.
Is it?
Yeah, the Jollymon. He wrote it as a children's story.
Oh. But yeah, gerrymandering has been popping up in the news quite a bit, and we thought it would be kind of a timely episode to bring back a little bit and talk about it some more.
Yeah, because we just talked about what it is and what it does and how it works, but now there's actually people that are trying to do something about it because, I don't know about you, but I don't think this is a good practice. Whichever side of the political fence you're on, it's not a good practice.
I agree. It's not really a good thing because depending on who's in power, it shouldn't really reflect, I guess, how your vote gets counted because it can essentially take your vote away from you, kind of.
You're gypping the American people.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we are supposed to be, our vote is supposed to mean something. And gerrymandering, whichever side does it, it doesn't matter. It's taking away what your vote is worth. It's grouping people for political gains. And it's just amazing the lengths that people are able to go to do it. And it makes you wonder, why was the system set up this way? It's just set up for corruption.
Well, now, one of the odd things about gerrymandering is, where does the name come from? Now, we talked about this before, but it's very interesting, interesting story. So if maybe you missed that episode or haven't heard it before, you probably want to listen up because it's really strange.
Yeah, we'll catch you up on gerrymandering, where it came from and how it works, in case you didn't know or didn't listen to that episode or just plain forgot.
So gerrymandering, to define it, means to manipulate the boundaries of an electoral constituency so as to favor one party or class. And that's the definition of it. Now, the beginning of it, where it gets its name, was back in 1812. There was a governor of Massachusetts named Governor Jerry, or Gary.
Elbridge Gerry.
Yeah.
His last name was Jerry.
Jerry.
Elbridge, it's time for dinner.
Elbridge, it's time to redistrict the map. And what he did was, he basically redistricted Massachusetts so it would benefit his Democratic-Republican Party.
Now, tell me, that doesn't cause some confusion.
Yeah.
Who are you a member of? The Democratic-Republican Party? What?
Say what?
Which one is that? And when he drew it, the thing was so strange looking as it went around, everybody said it looked like some kind of a dragon or a salamander. So they took his last name, Jerry, and put it with salamander and came up with gerrymander.
Yeah. And so basically, it was drawn in a cartoon in 1812, and they kind of drew it as a salamander and also called it a gerrymander, like you said. And gerrymander is actually, it's a English term. It's a portmanteau. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah. Bob Seger sings about that. I think I'm going to Kathmandu. Oh, that's Kathmandu. He's going to portmanteau.
So basically, a portmanteau is where you kind of linguistically blend two words. So you can take different words, multiple words, and kind of mash them together. So they basically took his name, Jerry, and the salamander, which was the drawing, and put it as gerrymander. And that's where they get it from.
I get it. It's like the celebrities when you have like Bennifer and what are some of the other popular ones?
Brangelina?
Yeah, Brangelina and all that. Kind of like that. Is that a portmanteau? Portmanteau?
It is.
Kathmandu?
Some other ones that are not celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
For example, smog. Do you know where that comes from?
Probably fog and smoke.
Exactly.
Huh. What do you know?
Motel.
Motel? Motor lodge and hotel.
Well, motor and hotel, but one of my favorites is a banjo L.
Banjo L?
Yep.
Well, it's got to be a banjo and El Kabong.
A banjo and a ukulele.
Oh. El Kabong. You remember El Kabong?
Do you know what you could do?
El Kabong? That was Quick Draw McGraw's alter ego.
No.
Yeah, El Kabong. He would come up behind the bad guys and crash him over the head with a guitar. And they called himself El Kabong.
I remember that character, but I don't remember...
Remember Quick Draw McGraw?
Yeah.
It was his alter ego.
Ah. But do you know what you can do with a banjo L?
No, I have no idea what you can do with a banjo. Hit somebody over the head?
You can play Deliver Aloha on it.
Deliver Aloha?
Yeah, like Deliverance and Aloha.
Oh, Deliverance and Aloha.
Deliver Aloha.
Oh, okay. So you just made another word.
I worked on that joke for about 3 hours today.
I see what you did there. No wonder you fell asleep and took a nap, if that was what you were working on. Do they make you squeal like a pig when you sing it?
Well, I have some other favorite portmanteaus that I came across, too, that I wanted to bring up. They're not really related to gerrymandering.
I keep wanting to sing Kathmandu every time you say that word.
Selfish.
Selfish?
Spelled...
Not shellfish, right?
Spelled C-E-L-L-F-I-S-H. And that's an individual who continues talking on their phone, so to be rude or inconsiderate of other people.
Huh. Well, so, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good one.
I see those kind of people.
Beer boarding.
Beer boarding?
Where you extract secret information from a friend or a colleague by getting them drunk.
I've never tried that.
Internest.
Internest? That's got to be the internet and... I don't know what else.
The cocoon of blankets and pillows you gather around you while spending long periods of time on the internet.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Afterclap.
Afterclap. That's what you look like after your antibiotics are done?
The last person who claps after everyone else has stopped.
Oh, that last.
Now, this is one of my favorites, because I know I do this. Textpectation.
As long as you don't have to say it.
Textpectation.
That's waiting for someone to send you a text back?
Yeah, it's the anticipation felt when waiting for a response to a text.
I have that one all the time. Mike, are we recording tomorrow? Mike, what is our topic? Mike, do we have any ads? Mike, are you there?
That reminds me of another favorite one. It's called an asshole.
Asshole, what are you calling me?
Someone who asks many stupid, pointless, or obnoxious questions.
They're an asshole?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But that's actually one of my favorite literary things. I love smashing words together to make new words.
Well, good. Just like the smash-ups on Glee when they smash together an old song and a current song. Those two?
That's a remix.
Well, remix? Well, they called them a smash-up.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, on Glee.
I'm not very gleeful.
You're not?
I don't watch Glee.
Well, it's off the air now. You can't watch it.
I bet I can find it somewhere on the internet.
Netflix or somewhere.
I'll get in my internest and find it.
There you go. Well, one thing that... Getting back to our topic there.
Yes.
Gerrymander.
Yes.
One thing that struck me is, you know, when we did an episode a few back and we talked about our forefathers, and that one of the points of emphasis is they did not want partisan politics to enter into the ruling of our nation. and we figured out that by the third presidential election, that was what it was ruled by, was partisan politics. So we it didn't start till 1776, and by 1780 something, we were already into that.
Yeah.
So here it was 1812 when this gerrymander took place.
Yeah, it's a rich and storied history in
yeah. I mean, it America. Practically started right away.
Yeah.
I mean, we were a quarter of a century old, and we already have these kind of things going for us where you're trying to divide up your state for one party to gain benefit from it. And, I mean, it's been going downhill ever since.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that right now, currently, North Carolina gerrymandering is some of the best in the country.
Oh, well, good. Good for them.
They really got it going on here. So there's been kind of a lot of things in the news recently about North Carolina. This is what kind of brought it to my attention.
Mm-hmm.
So recently, judges in North Carolina said that despite declaring the state's electoral map to be unconstitutionally gerrymandered for partisan reasons, there really wasn't enough time for the map to be withdrawn before the midterm elections in November. So they basically said, yeah, these are really bad, and we need to change them, but
we
can't do it now. One of the things they said was that we further find that imposing a new schedule for North Carolina's congressional elections would, at this late juncture, unduly interfere with the state's electoral machinery and likely confuse voters and depress turnout, which is Judge James...
And depress voters.
Depressed turnout. Did I say voters or turnout?
No, you said turnout. Oh, okay. I was thinking they'd be depressed voters.
Well, they probably are anyway, because their vote's not going to count for anything because the way it's drawn up. So you got to think, what's worse? To redraw it and then confuse voters and depress turnout, or to let it go the way it was? So basically, previously, like last week, the same judges, had gone on and basically said that the 2016 congressional redistricting plan was made with the express purpose to ensure Republican candidates would prevail in a vast majority of the state's congressional districts. The court said that the Republican-created plan violated the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause, the First Amendment, and Article 1 of the Constitution. So they've already basically said that the way they withdrew, the way they redrew these as they were supposed to after 2011 was just not right. It was unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's pretty clear. But the thing is you can't really do anything about it at this point.
No, it had to be addressed after the midterm elections.
Yeah. The thing is that a lot of the advocacy groups who were trying to fight this, they are basically going along and saying, hey, you know what? We actually would rather they use the current map right now to confuse voters for the November election, and we'll kind of go about this later on, redrawing it. Because they're afraid that the lower voter turnout would actually hurt more than redrawing it.
Well, here's the other thing.
And also, maybe they don't have the number of votes they needed to try to fix it right now. So.
Well, here's the other thing, too, is you know how these things are, what's the impetus for the redrawing of these maps?
Well, partisan politics.
Partisan politics, but also the 10-year census.
Yeah.
That every 10 years, the census comes out, and it tells you how many people are in what district. And you're supposed to redistribute the districts so that it's more like one vote to one person. You don't want to have one district that has a million people and another district that has 200,000. Because then, in effect, the one that has 200,000, their one vote is worth a lot more than the one in the district with a million people.
Absolutely.
So you have to redistribute it. So I'm saying that if even though they say we can't do it before the midterm, they're probably not going to do it till after the 2020 census. And they have that information to go to it. Otherwise, you're going to turn right around and do it again.
Well, quite possibly. I mean, it's a complicated situation,
I think.
You can't just really fix it right away. Now, the thing is that basically this has been going on for quite some time.
Since 1812.
Well, in North Carolina, this one instance in North Carolina. In 2011, they had a map is when they actually redrew it. And they basically said that it was unconstitutional racial gerrymandering. So that basically this stems back to 2011. It was redrawn back then.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know when the census is according to that, but the map they're looking at is not one they just did recently. It's been around for a few years.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and they've said, the Supreme Court has said that they don't find it unconstitutional if it's gerrymandered on partisan levels.
Mm-hmm.
They do find it unconstitutional if it's gerrymandered on racial levels, where you're trying to take away the right of a particular minority's vote.
And the court actually went on to say that basically they don't care if they use this map in November, but they're actually barred from using it in any following election. So they are going to have to get after it pretty soon, I think, is what the court's saying. Basically, what to differentiate between the partisanship and the racial ramifications of it, the partisanship is kind of looked at to be okay, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
They understand that's kind of, well, it's maybe a little bit of part of the game, as much as I don't like that, but that is kind of what's allowed. There's one Republican North Carolina member of the General Assembly, and he said, I think electing Republicans is better than electing Democrats, said Republican Daniel Lewis.
Well, that's the pot calling the kettle black.
He says, so I drew this map to help foster what I think is better for the country. He added, I propose that we draw the maps to give the partisan advantage to 10 Republicans and 3 Democrats, because I do not believe it's possible to draw a map with 11 Republicans and 2 Democrats. So basically the only reason he drew it this way is because there is no way to draw it.
To get 11.
11, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just bold face coming out and saying that. But now, I mean, obviously, the court felt that it went beyond just this partisanship and that they were doing something much more nefarious with racial undertones. So,
well, I don't know. I guess it just depends on how you look at it. But obviously there are groups that are not being represented when this is done. They're taking away somebody's voice, whether it's by race or politics. They're taking away somebody's voice. And that should not be the way our elections work.
No, absolutely not. I mean, if you basically draw the district because you know that you're going to cancel out somebody else's vote in an area, so you split like some sort of racial divide, you know this one racial group's going to vote a certain way, or you think they are, and you split that group down the middle and divide their power, so they're essentially throwing their vote away by voting into this large majority, then that's not fair, and that's not right, that's not American, that's not constitutional. I mean, mm-hmm. you're basically taking away all their constitutional rights by doing that. You're taking away the voting, which is one of our most American privileges, and just getting rid of it.
Exactly.
You're taking away their vote.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's my soapbox right there.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, and like I say, it doesn't matter which side you're on. You're going to be on the winning end of that sometimes, and you're going to be on the losing end. But overall, I think we as taxpayers in having elected representatives are on the losing end because we're giving in to partisan politics. And partisan politics is never going to be the best thing for anybody, whichever party's in charge.
No, you're right. We were talking about a little bit before we started recording. You said something about the pendulum, which way it's swinging. And, I mean, sometimes you're the hammer, sometimes you're the nail. It's not good to be either one of those.
Sometimes you're the sickle.
That's right, comrade.
That's Facebook's problem.
Yeah, that's true. We'll leave that to some other debate.
But besides North Carolina, there are also redistricting challenges in Wisconsin, Maryland, Texas, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Georgia, Michigan, Alabama, and that's all.
So this is obviously a problem that's kind of going on a lot of different places.
Right. That people are challenging it and taking it to court. Now, on all those, some of them, it's just strictly the claim is partisan gerrymandering. On other ones, it's racial gerrymandering. And other ones, it's racial and partisan gerrymandering. You know, they go with both of them. Even though the Supreme Court has not upheld partisan gerrymandering, I think that at some point, everybody's got to get fed up with this eventually, don't they?
I don't know. Maybe they keep thinking like they're waiting for the pendulum to swing their way, so they don't want to get rid of it.
I mean, do we have to be living in The Handmaid's Tale before people finally say, you know what? Maybe we went too far. Maybe we need to move back the other direction.
I know the Wisconsin case, I read about that, and actually that was kicked out because the Supreme Court said that the petitioners didn't have standing in order to challenge that one. So it's kind of an update that came out recently. So the court kind of declined to rule on that one on the merits, so to speak.
Well, in addition to challenging them in courts, several other states have gone about this by trying to take it to the voters.
Yeah.
They want the voters to solve the issue on this. So they have ballot issues that have been presented in Michigan, proposed constitutional amendment to end gerrymandering, written and promoted by a nonpartisan group called Voters, Not Politicians, will be on the ballot in November unless blocked by a court challenge that has so far fallen short. So many Michiganders? Have you ever heard of Michiganders?
I have.
Take a gander at that. That's a Michigander. So many Michiganders signed petitions to bring the measure to a vote, 110,000 more than state law requires, that the group ended its signature campaign 70 days short of the 6 months allowed.
Yeah.
That tells you there's a lot of interest in a change in that.
Oh, no doubt. And, you know, and that puts it in the hands of the people as opposed to the courts.
As it should be.
I agree.
In Missouri, another nonpartisan group called Clean Missouri needed 180,000 signatures to get its anti-gerrymander initiative on the ballot. It collected 346,000. Final certification is expected next month. In Utah, a group called Better Boundaries collected 190,000 signatures, 75,000 more than were required to place its proposition to end gerrymanders on the November ballot. And in Colorado, both the Democratic-run State House and the Republican-run Senate voted unanimously in May to place two proposals on the November ballot that would shift the duty to draw state legislative and congressional districts away from lawmakers and into the hands of independent redistricting committees. Those proposals join another in Ohio that became law in May. The state legislature there put a measure to curb partisan gerrymandering of the state's congressional districts on the ballot for the state's May 8th primary after it became apparent that a citizens' campaign for an even tougher measure was likely to succeed. Ohioans approved the legislature's version by a 3-1 margin.
Yeah, so it seems like there's a universal kind of disdain for this party politics. But it doesn't get a lot of press.
But here's what I don't understand. And I guess this is my own naivety. I don't say that right, I guess. Nativity? That's a scene with Jesus in the manger. That's it not is. The same thing.
Naivety?
Yeah, something like Nativity? That. My own ignorance. How about that?
Sounds good. Let's go with that.
Our representatives, by definition, by the term, they represent us. They represent us and what our thoughts are. Why don't they represent us? Why do they represent themselves and their party over us? And I'm not talking Republicans and I'm not talking Democrats. I'm talking all our representatives.
Well, I think the bad ones do. I think the good ones actually do try to care about what some people in their constituents think, and they make themselves accountable to it. But the bottom line is that the party is what helps them get elected, and that's kind of the downside of it. That's where they get a lot of their kind of funding, and they get a lot of the support.
That's where we need to take the money out of politics.
Yeah.
Take the money out of politics, and then maybe you're not so beholden, because there's a couple things. Well, first of all, when you talk about maybe the good ones do, I think the only good one we had, the only nonpartisan one that was willing to do that, just died a week or two ago. I think we lost him.
Yeah.
But the money in the politics is what's causing the downfall. This thing with all these campaign ads that we get sick of seeing and everything else, all the money that drives behind it, it's a big, big machine.
Oh, no doubt.
They take away our votes with all this money. We need campaign reform. We need the money out of politics. We need term limits, and we need to be able to hold people accountable and take the money out of it, and we would all be a lot better off.
Sounds like a lot of work, Tommy.
It's not. I'll be glad to sit down with people and help draw that up. It's not that much work to take the money out of it. I mean, it'd be very simple. You're allowed to spend this much at this level. This level is allowed to spend this much. And all these independent things, I know they say it's their First Amendment rights to run these ads bashing the other candidate so that these people from New York are running ads against one of our people, you know, one of our people running in this state so that they can get the, you know, whichever party they're for elected. We don't need them to come down here and run ads against that. I don't even think they should be allowed to run negative ads. I'd rather just see, what are you going to do? Here's my main initiatives. Here's what I'm going to try to accomplish. That's what I want to hear. I don't want to hear, this guy's a crook. He's not even from here. You know, who cares? I don't care. Tell me what you're going to do for me.
You don't want to hear awesome kind of catchphrases like Crooked Hillary or whatever Trump's was.
Swamp creatures.
Yeah, or whatever.
And you know, here's the thing in West Virginia, you see. Everybody that's a Republican, all you want to do is tie the Democrat to Obama. He backed Obama. He voted for Hillary. What are you going to do? Oh, I voted for Trump. That makes me a good guy. They voted for Obama and Hillary. That's not enough.
Yeah.
I don't care which side you're on. That's not enough. Even if you're a Republican, the fact he voted for Trump doesn't make him our cure-all.
Yeah, I understand that, but that is something you see a lot here in West Virginia. They basically know that Trump won by a large margin here, and so they're
tie yourself to Trump.
Tying to Trump. And, you know, Trump came here and was stumping for Patrick Morrisey
mm-hmm.
for Joe Manchin's seat.
Right.
And, you know, I've seen a lot of those ads on TV, and I think it's kind of misquoting Manchin quite a bit as far as what they're trying to do. I mean, they're just simple attack ads that I think are pretty much false.
Well, they walk a fine line.
Yeah.
They're obviously edited and put in taken out of context. Maybe he actually said that, but not in the context it's presented.
Yeah. Now, I don't know that there's some about Morrissey, too, calling him a carpetbagger and different things right. like that.
I mean,
it's going both ways.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
But how sick are we going to be of seeing these ads by the time Election Day finally gets here?
I already am.
I know. It's awful.
And it's just now September.
Yeah, just barely.
Two more months of this stuff.
Yeah. It's awful.
But yeah, I mean, I think gerrymandering is something that needs to be addressed. But I think you're probably right. From the top down, it needs to be some sort of campaign reform and finance and things along those lines. But there's not much of an incentive for these elected officials to want to do it, because once they get there, then they want to stay there.
Exactly. And that's another thing. I brought this up on here before. They go there and they're just, you know, maybe they might be upper class, you know, might be doing okay money-wise. How come after a few years they're millionaires? They're not making $1 million a year in office. Why are they millionaires? Nobody ever writes about that. Where did their money come from? How do they have all that money? Why are they millionaires? I don't understand that. That's not the way it's supposed to be. You don't get elected to Congress or the Senate or whatever so that you can go become a millionaire. You're supposed to get there and be a performing a civic duty, you know? And I did say duty. A civic duty. A civil duty.
You laughed at your own duty.
They're an uncivil duty.
You laughed at your own duty joke. I don't think that might be a first on Court Opinion.
Usually duty. Duty.
Somebody else said
I said duty. But it's just not right. It's not right.
A lot of stuff grinding gears down here.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
What is that from?
Network.
Oh, the network?
No, the name of the movie was Network. We're mad as hell, and we're not going to take it anymore.
I don't know that I've ever seen that before.
It's an older movie.
I recognize that line.
Yeah, it's an older movie. But we talk about old movies all the time because I'm an old guy.
That's true. But to get back to gerrymandering, and you started talking about it a little bit with voter initiative as opposed to through the court system. And I think that is a better way to do it. I don't think the court system is really equipped to handle these gerrymandering cases. I don't think they want to decide them because, unfortunately, our courts are somewhat political at this point. They might not be elected, but they're appointed, and mm-hmm. there's different political ideologies that go along with it. You know, ideally, we would have judges who are all just don't have really a party. They don't really have party politics. They're just there. They're just a judge.
Well, here's the thing, too, is even if you take it to a federal court or whatever, you are going to have to kind of overrule the Supreme Court if you make a ruling, if it's just based on partisan politics, because the Supreme Court has already ruled racial gerrymandering is not okay.
Yeah.
But partisan gerrymandering, we don't have a problem with it.
And they
we're not going to intervene anyway.
They've found ways to decline to step into that and make a ruling on that time and time again, like the recent Wisconsin one where they said, well, you don't have standing to do this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're trying to find loopholes and ways to sidestep and not get involved in it, basically. So that's why I think if you have voter initiative, there's no way to get around it. It's just kind of, it's going to be on the ballot.
Well, I'll tell you what I'd be interested in. 5 states started the initiative and have moved it to the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's any states that tried that and they didn't have enough interest to do it.
I don't know. I know the gerrymandering seems to be becoming a bit more and more contentious these days. I mean, mm-hmm. I think it always is a little bit. I remember hearing about it when I was younger and whatnot, but I mean, I hear about it a lot more now. I mean, I might just be a bit more in tune with what's going on in the world, but it seems like it is more prevalent now. So I don't know, but I do think that probably having it in the hands of the voters as opposed to the courts is probably a step in the right direction. And a lot of times too, when you try to attack this under federal laws, you have so many protections that are under the Constitution as well. But you have a state constitution as well. And
right.
A lot of times the state constitution can give you more protections than the federal constitution. It can give you more, but it can't give you less, is essentially the way these state constitutions are written. So if the federal constitution gives you some protections for this, there's a good chance that your state constitution may actually give you higher protections for it, depending on how it was written. So that could be something that is used to address it in state courts as well, or alternatively, having the U.S. Constitution address or the U.S. Supreme Court address the state constitutions as well, if it gets appealed all the way up. So that's just something else to think about. And I think we are going to see more and more of this on a state level as opposed to a federal level.
Well, I think it definitely needs to be addressed, and I think that the partisanship needs to come out of it. But it made me think, you know, you don't hear about gerrymandering in other parts of the world, and it made me think, what do they do in other parts of the world that they, you know, don't have this kind of problem? And so I looked around, did some research, and it said, first of all, it says, what does redistricting look like in other parts of the world?
That's a good question. I really don't know.
Well, larger districts, number one, here's the first one. Larger districts send more than one representative to the legislature. So most democracies outside the English-speaking world elect more than one representative per district instead of one representative in every district that you're mm-hmm. voting for. When the number of seats per district can be adjusted, the principle of one person, one vote can often be achieved without redrawing boundary lines at all. You simply add a seat to a district that has grown and subtract a seat from a district that shrunk. That vastly reduces the possibility of reshaping outcomes by manipulating boundaries. So you could just geographically Say you have four representatives. Draw a line right down the middle and elect two in each side. And if the population shifted where you have that many more in one side than the other, then you move three representatives in one and one in the other.
That's interesting because we kind of have that here for our, at least our House of Delegates.
House of Delegates, yeah. But now, you know, they've reduced that a lot. For instance, when my mother ran for the legislature back in 1966, she was in a district that had six representatives were elected.
Mm-hmm.
Now you don't have any around here that are any bigger than two or maybe three.
Oh, so they've changed that around quite a bit.
Yeah, they've changed around. And a lot of them are single-member districts now. I know the one in Barbersville used to be part of that six. Now it's a single member out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they have redistricted a lot of those to reduce them. There was a push for one person, one district.
Because I remember when your mom used to run, that it was like, pick your best six.
That's right. Yeah, there'd be 12 of them on the ballot from the district, six Republicans and six Democrats in the general.
Yeah.
And you had to pick. Usually it was five Democrats and her.
Well, you got to ask yourself, why did we get away from that?
Well, it's like I say, there was an initiative that went forward. Now, it's also the Republicans got control of the legislature for the first time in 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the redistricting started. And they reduced it down. And so they changed it into groups that I think they felt benefited them.
Yeah.
They did better in single member, one person against one person, rather than the six against six. Because even though the voting in West Virginia has changed, where we were consistently a blue state for years, now just in the last few elections, we're a solid red state. But if you look at the number of Republicans and Democrats, we're still more Democrats than Republicans in the state. There's just the Republican Party and the Democratic Party have so changed the way they represent themselves that the people didn't change, the parties changed, and it left people disenfranchised, really, from the parties.
Yeah.
I can't identify with either one of them.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one.
I mean, I was raised as a Republican, and in 2006, because of Don Blankenship running the Republican Party, I said, I must not be a Republican, and I switched to a Democrat, and now I don't identify with either one of them. And the only reason I don't register independent is I want to vote in the elections.
Yeah.
Number two way, political neutral bodies draw districts. In most other long-term democracies, a politically neutral body draws new districts, perhaps a quasi-judicial body or nonpartisan administrative board or commission. The redistricting bodies of some countries, such as New Zealand, include representatives of the major parties. But the more common pattern is to explicitly exclude anyone with partisan connections, as is true in Canada and India. In Britain, the redistribution of parliamentary constituencies is carried out by a nonpartisan boundary commission. Parties can object to the commission's redistricting recommendations. I have a hard time saying that word. But it's purely a consultation. Their overall influence is limited. In some long-term democracies, such as Britain, legislatures must approve the new electoral maps that have been drawn by independent bodies, but this is typically a formality. So they've got completely independent people that do it.
I got to ask, you know, if the United States, if we did that, how would we go about forming that kind of autonomous body to do that?
Well, I mean, how do you get nonpartisan judges? You have nonpartisan elections for judges.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you get that? You know, I don't know. The only other way it would be is to make it equally staffed and do it. You know, like you say, you have six people, you got three Republicans and three Democrats. Something like that.
What do you do when it's tied 3-3?
Well, that's where compromise is going to have to come in.
I don't know that.
We'll give you this one, but we want this one.
That word doesn't exist in America anymore, I don't
think. It doesn't. You're right. There is no compromise. Another method, district boundaries are harder to manipulate. Unlike those in other countries, district boundaries in the United States are easy to manipulate. Lines are not required to respect pre-existing political boundaries. Districts are permitted to cut across such boundaries in a variety of ways and can end up resembling amoebas or starfish.
Or salamanders.
Or salamanders, that's right, or gerrymanders. Americans might be surprised to learn that single-member districts in Mexico are drawn in concordance with an algorithm developed by a so-called technical committee implementing good government criteria of districting. The committee's map is then submitted for two rounds of review by the political parties. Modifications are accepted only if they improve the value of a pre-established scoring function. So this algorithm has an actual scoring function of fairness in how the districts are divided. So it's only if you make a suggestion that makes that value higher will they change it. Otherwise, this algorithm, a computer algorithm, decides it.
Math can save us all.
Yeah. I mean, Zuckerberg could probably come up with something like that, don't you think?
Probably.
The Russians could help him. I don't know.
I'm sure they're working on that as we speak.
Legal.
Let us sell you this algorithm program. It'll be great.
Yeah, we'll sell you, comrade. We have an algorithm you can buy.
It's called Red Square.
Putin.com. Let's see. Legal challenges are more limited. The redistricting process runs through the courts astonishingly often. Few redistricting plans escape court challenges. Federal and state courts have intervened in hundreds, perhaps thousands of cases. Scores of these have made their way up for review by the Supreme Court. Most legal challenges are based on language from the Constitution, especially the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, or Article 1. In some established democracies, such as Japan, they have been important one-person, one-vote cases. The meaning of the proportionality principle has been litigated in countries such as Germany and Switzerland. In Britain, Canada, and many African countries, judicial review is permitted but rarely used. However, in most other countries, legal challenges are limited, and there is not the same concern for strict population equality. In some less democratic countries, such as Pakistan, the courts are actually prohibited from becoming involved in redistricting. Some of that reflects differences in legal culture, but one key reason for the rarity of legal challenges in most countries is that they simply don't face the kind of political manipulations and grossly distorted district lines endemic in the United States. That's right. They don't suffer from that kind of partisan politics.
That's funny.
Now, how could redistricting be changed to reduce gerrymandering? Single-seat, winner-take-all districts could be replaced by multi-seat districts with some form of proportional representation. Less drastic changes, such as California's shift to a commission-based form of districting, could also be implemented. The change that most likely involves more direct court scrutiny of the most egregious partisan aspects of the redistricting process could be free of gerrymandering.
Well, so there's possibly some different ways we could look outside of our country to get some advice on how to change it.
I like the algorithm thing.
I do kind of like the algorithm thing. I also like going back to the multi-seat districts, because mm-hmm. I kind of like that idea. And I think that's how we used to have it here, and I don't know why we changed it.
Well, that's what I say. I think that it was, I mean, I could be wrong, but I think it was changed when the Republicans got control of the legislature. They took the next census, and they redistricted things because they felt like they would do better in one-on-one races.
Yeah.
As opposed to the big ones. Because most of the incumbents were Democrats that had been in there before.
Yeah, I guess maybe, you know, as far as senators, if you're having a senator instead of having a, I mean, I guess each senator has their own little district, I think, in West Virginia, right?
Right.
So instead of that, just vote for your favorite two.
Yeah.
Pick two. You pick two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like McDonald's.
Well, I mean, we're not
big
enough.
A chicken sandwich.
We're not big enough to have all these districts and everything, if you ask me. It's just like, we have 55 counties.
I know. That's crazy.
In this small of a state. I mean, California has 55 counties, I think, or something near that.
Well, some of them are really...
And they're like, what, 10 times our size or more?
Oh, probably 100.
I mean, it's unbelievable. We could fit in the lower corner of it. We wouldn't have even been, you know, they had that issue there to vote to divide them into three separate states. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have been as big as any one of the three.
What's funny is too is that some of the counties in West Virginia are kind of large, and some of them are actually really, really small. There's no rhyme or reason to it. So,
and they all have their own county systems and their own school boards and their own sheriff's department. All that money going into all that thing, and that's why it's the good old boy system.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we talk about different legal terms and whatnot. Or literary terms that we talked about. What is gerrymandering, Tommy?
Gerrymandering is dividing up the political or the electoral districts by partisan means.
Or racial means.
Or racial means, yes.
Which that'll get
to benefit a particular political party, usually.
That's right. Gerrymandering is an example of what kind of word?
Kathmandu. what you say, Potmantu?
Portmanteau.
Portmanteau.
That's right.
And it was like Kathmandu.
And speaking of Portmanteau, what is a banjo-el?
That is a banjo and a ukulele put together as one, and you can play Deliverance and something else there, somewhere with a rainbow. Deliverance over the rainbow.
Make you luau like a pig, boy. And I mentioned it when I was talking about the Supreme Court case, the Wisconsin case, where the Supreme Court declined to hear it on the merits, and they said it lacked standing. What does that mean when it says something lacks standing?
That means it had two bad knees and it couldn't stand up. They said they were in the wrong place to present that case. They didn't have standing to argue that case there because it wasn't their case to argue.
What it basically means is that it's a term of the ability of a party to demonstrate to the court sufficient connection to and harm from the law or action challenged to support the party's participation in the case. So basically they said, you know what, we really don't think you are affected enough by this case to bring this. So they lack standing.
For the affected only.
Yeah, so exactly. Like if you got hurt in an auto accident or something like that, and I said, well, I'm suing for Tommy because I'm going to do it for him. I couldn't do that. You would actually have to be the party because I would lack standing.
Unless you were my lawyer.
Well, that's true, but you would be my client, and I would be filing a
lawsuit.
You'd
be suing for me.
For you.
Yeah. On my behalf.
Likewise. Like,
and I only pay if I win, right?
Yeah, sure. And likewise.
That's what William Shatner says.
Denny Crane?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's on these commercials. If you see him, he's on local commercials for some lawyer.
Is he really?
Yeah. William Shatner. How'd they get him to do it for some local lawyer? You never know what depths he'll stoop to.
It's on Arrested Development. They're trying to get Matlock, Andy Griffith, to sit in next to you. And he charges $10,000 to sit next to you in court. And if you want him to nod, it's an extra $2,000.
I never watched that show. So yeah. I've watched about two episodes. That's it.
It's a good show.
I'll take your word for it.
Well, you did pretty well in legal briefs.
Well, thank you. When we were talking about Over the Rainbow, you know what that made me think?
What's that?
Did you hear that they found Dorothy's long-lost ruby slippers?
I saw that in the news today.
Been missing for 14 years. Somebody had broken into a museum and stolen them. And now they had some kind of sting operation and found them. And they presented them back to the guy that had loaned them to this museum to put them on display. And he just broke down in tears. He was so happy to get his ruby red slippers back. And they hated to put a value on it, but they said it would go at auction for millions of dollars.
For ruby red slippers.
Yep. One of the four original pairs that were in the show.
Did the police have some sort of catchy sting name for it?
I didn't hear one, no. Like ruby slipper sting or something?
That's not catchy at all.
Operation Dorothy.
That's still not very catchy.
Toto 2, are you a good witch or a bad witch? Which?
Which witch?
Which witch?
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Sproul. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.